Welcome back to the Puma Podcast. I'm Tori.
I am Puma. We're so glad that you joined us today.
Yes. And friends, on this podcast, we talk about, what is it, Puma?
Yeah, Jesus, life, and everything in between.
Yes. Yes. And you know, one of the fun things about everything and Jesus and in the between are the different names we have, and not just our names, but the names God has. And we are currently in our Names of God series, where we're going through not all, but a lot of the key names we think that really highlight a different aspect, a different character, a different quality of our God, the God of the Bible.
Yeah, when life is about people, relationships, and I'll be honest. I mean, there are people that I like and people that I don't in this life. Mm. There are people that I trust and people that I don't trust.
Right.
And I would say that there's a lot of people that I don't trust because I don't know who they are. I mean, I walk past people every day when I'm out and about, but I don't know them. I don't have a relationship with them. And so I'm not going to trust them with my car keys while I go inside and get groceries, right?
Right.
Hey, sir, can you hold my keys while I go inside and get groceries?
Yeah, here's my wallet while I just take a lap.
Yeah, trust is really sort of the glue or foundation for relationships. Mm-hmm. And our key theme verse for this series is Psalm 9:10, which says, "Those who know your name will trust in you. For you, Lord, have never forsaken those who seek you."
Yeah. Wow.
So So to know God, get to know God more and more will cause us to trust him more and more.
Yes.
And the more we trust him, the more we believe what he says. And when he says that he will never leave us or forsake us, that he wants us to know him and he wants to be known and he knows everything about us. We should believe what he says. So the Bible is God's love letter to us, right?
It is. Yeah.
It's how he has chosen to communicate himself to us. And in this amazing book are many different names or titles that he has given. Sometimes he gives himself, says, "This is who I am, this is a name." Sometimes it's a title or something that people say of him as they experience him interacting and find that he is more amazing than they thought. That God is worthy of our trust.
Yeah. Well, yeah, let's dive into this new name of God, El Elyon. All right, Puma. So before we dive into this new name, El Elyon, I have a kind of a question we kind of talked about before the podcast, and that is wow worthiness. You know, should we be in our culture wowed by things? You know, should there ever be a place and time where we're just like, wow, and speechless?
We are in a world where few people are ever left speechless. I mean, you know, we're in a world where everyone wants to give speeches, right? I mean, the whole internet, social media is really opened up a platform where everybody, quote unquote, has a voice and everyone has things to say and we want to express ourselves and have people listen and understand. And the old saying goes, if everything is amazing, then
nothing is.
Then nothing's amazing, right? I mean, everything can't be amazing. But are there some things that are more amazing than others?
Yeah, I'd say so. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, in a world of like social media, right? Everyone has a comment, everyone has an opinion, and we're encouraged to, probably wrongfully so, but we're encouraged to express that. We're encouraged to, if you like this, hate this, or are neutral about it, tell people, have a voice. And yet, some comments are really good, like, that was good. And some comments are like, that was a waste of space, a waste of words. And you can see sometimes a quite striking difference in things that are, that someone just spewing, you know, nonsense, and someone, that was actually well thought through. That was actually a good comment that actually brought value to the group and those reading. So I think something should be like, that was good. And maybe a moment of recognition, and some things are like, I could have not wasted time reading that.
Right. I mean, in a world where we're really not encouraged to stand out, everything is supposed to be kind of equal, or, you know, everyone gets a chance. I mean, you know, when I growing up, I lived for trophies and ribbons and beating everybody and saying, "Hey, I'm better than you," you know, and when they started giving every team a trophy and every kid a ribbon, it's like, well, what's
the point?
Yeah. You know, what's the point of that? But to be wowed, by something, to be left speechless or something is just amazing. Have you had any, those kind of amazing moments?
Yeah, I think when I proposed to my wife and she almost smacked me because I accidentally scared her coming around the corner with the ring. You know, that moment of realization when my wife was like, wow, like, he wants to marry me. My reaction was, wow, she is just gorgeous. I remember even to the wedding day, watching her walk down, and that was a wow moment for me. Yeah, there's certain moments in my life that just people and things I really respect and appreciated, it just, you know, was wow, or a great act of kindness, or like a really extreme sacrificial, you know, something happened, like, wow, that person did that. Like, that's amazing. Even with the past, you know, totally Charlie Kirk thing and Erica, you know, coming out and saying, I forgive the man that, you know.
Right, those are the kind of things you don't expect.
Right,
it makes you step back and like, huh.
That was a wow-worthy moment.
Yeah, just one of those things. Well, yeah, we talk about getting married. You'll experience this relatively soon, just the wow or the amazing of seeing your child come into the world. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just like kind of, it's hard to explain in words just how you feel. Mm-hmm. But we have these moments in life that are just almost otherworldly, or wow, that just transcended mm-hmm. the normal, mundane, everyday thing. There's something special or unique or amazing or higher or lofty here. It's something mm-hmm. that is just, something is greater here, mm-hmm. something intrinsic. And I think this strikes the heart of what the Bible calls worship, right? Mm-hmm. To give worth or value to something that's amazing, and to be in awe of it. I remember I grew up near Niagara Falls, and we went to the falls all the time, and I didn't really see the beauty or worth of Niagara Falls. And then after, you know, I got married and moved back, and we took that Maid of the Mist boat tour. And I mean, I had seen the falls my whole life growing up there. Yeah, whatever. It's one of the seven natural wonders of the world. Yada, yada, yada.
Man, big deal.
Yeah, so what? You know, I came over here to get gas. Right? we got on that boat, and the Horseshoe Falls, it's like a mile around, and I can't remember how many feet high it is, but just the boat, you know, goes up and creeps up to the falls, and just the sound of the millions of gallons of water going over every second, and the rush, the mist, and that, and it was awing. I remember like your drive, you know, the boat drives right up almost. Up to it, and it's like, this is just amazing. And it's hard to put into words, you know, and isn't this what, you know, people are inspired, they write stories and poetry, they want to, you know, express something that transcends the mundane or the normal, something that's higher, loftier, grander, something more valuable.
Sure, that stands out, that's worthy.
Yeah, we want to express that somehow with words. And, you know, this name that we're talking about today of God, El Elyon. So we talked, a few weeks ago that the Elohim is the plural of the word El. El is just sort of the, you know, the Semitic word for God, just God, just kind of generic God. But the El compound names in the Bible, it's, you know, God something. And so El Elyon, and Elyon means high or lofty or lifted up. Mm. It's that God is the high and lofty one. Mm. He is high and lifted up. Yeah. And there are many places in the Old Testament especially that talk about this. And one of the first instances that this comes up is in Genesis chapter 14. For those that aren't familiar with Genesis 14, so God called this man Abram. We know him as Abraham. Mm-hmm. God changed his name. So I'll just refer to him as Abraham so we're familiar. But so Abraham is living. He had a nephew, Lot. And some might be familiar with the story of Sodom and Gomorrah, those words.
Yeah.
You know, those names come out, right? So Lot is living in Sodom. And, you know, back in that day, there wasn't like this big centralized government. And so every city was kind of like a city-state. Mm-hmm. And every city had their kind of their kings and their
surrounding. Yeah, their own independence.
Yeah, their own independence. And so cities, you know, would rival each other. And so some cities are bigger, or stronger, or have more, and so they kind of dictate or dominate the region. And so it just so happened that there was a king, and he gathered three other kings around him, and they were going to go to war against five other city-states, two of those being Sodom and Gomorrah. And so the five south cities, you know, the king of Sodom and Gomorrah and their people went out to war against the four other kings opposing them. And the four kings routed Sodom and Gomorrah's kings and the other kings, and they took all the people and all their plunder. And since Lot was living in Sodom, Lot got taken with all his possessions and family as well.
Wait, so you're saying these four kings took over and routed, you know, cast out, chased the other five.
The other five kings.
The other five kings.
Yeah.
So the team, you know, the underdogs, like, demolished the supposedly winning side with five.
Yeah, well, and they weren't really underdogs. I mean, the one king had been kind of domineering for about 10, 12 years, the region, and decided he wanted more. And so he went to war, gathered some other kings to go to war with him against these other kings to take him over, and they did.
Hmm.
Well, it so happened that someone escaped, you know, that.
Someone always does.
And every story, someone escaped. So, and they go to Abraham, and they say, hey, dude, you know, because Abraham was just kind of living out in the, you know, away from the cities, and says, hey, you know, these kings came and did this, and your nephew Lot was one in all of his possessions. And Abraham's like, all right, fine, I'm going to go get my nephew back in his possessions. And so, you know, it says that Abraham, verse 14 of Genesis 14, you know, heard what happened and his relative had been taken. And so he called out 318 trained men born in his household and went to pursue these kings and all the people.
So Abraham and his 318, you know, people.
Right. And so, I mean, you know, he's not a city. He's not, you know, it just
right.
These trained men in his household. And so they chased them in the far north of what was today modern day Israel, from the far south down by the bottom of the Dead Sea, all the way in north of, you know, the Sea of Galilee. They chased them all the way up there. They caught up with them. They overtook them. They routed them, and they brought all the people and plunder all the way back down.
Wow.
You know, rescued Lot and everything.
Like five cities worth.
Yeah. You know, and so Abraham, now did Abraham do this? Or did Abraham have help?
Abraham for sure had help.
Abraham for sure had help. I mean, you know, when we think of like things that are awe-worthy, like how in the world does one man and his household go and they do what five city-states and their kings couldn't?
Yeah.
You know, how is that possible? So Abraham, you know, comes back and brings the people back. And, you know, it's interesting that Melchizedek, who was the king of Salem, you know, was so thankful that Abraham did this, that it says that he brought bread and wine. Says he was a priest of God Most High. He was a priest of El Elyon.
Interesting.
And he blessed Abraham, and he said, blessed be Abraham by El Elyon, the Most High God, the creator of the heaven and the earth. And he blessed, and blessed be the Most High God who delivered your enemies into your hand. See, the Melchizedek, this priest of Salem, king priest of Salem, he recognized that Abraham shouldn't have been able to do what he did.
It was a miracle.
It was a miracle. The only reason he could do what happened is because El Elyon, the God Most High, not the God of Sodom, not the God of Gomorrah, not the God of any of these other city-states, but the God that Abraham followed is the Most High God. Of all the gods, one has to be the Most High. And the credit here was Yahweh. God that called Abraham, he was seen and declared to be El Elyon, the God, the Most High God.
You know, I love this name, El Elyon, because it really, for me, this name didn't jump out until we got some context about Israeli culture. And so if we can kind of just talk a little bit about that, because I think part of the beauty of this word comes from the cultural significance of highness, loftiness, of being elevated. I remember when, we both went to Israel, different trips, but I remember when I was in Israel, they were talking about particularly a psalm, Psalm 121, verse 1, and it's actually a fairly common verse in the Psalms, and it's that, maybe you've heard it in that One Mercy Me song, right? But it's, I lift my eyes into the hills, where does my help come from? My help comes from the Lord, that's Yahweh, the maker of heaven and earth. And while we were on Mount Gabor. So we're on this mountain, right? And we're talking about this verse. And the professor slash, you know, not really instructor, but the guide was saying, you know, in Israel, to be taller, to be a lofted place was super significant. And it's like, why would I look to the hills? Like, what does that mean? I lift my eyes to the hills. Where does my help come from? It goes, there was a real significance about elevation. That if you were elevated than other people, you had more honor, more power, more authority. He's like, that's why people with kings were on a throne, teachers, even the rabbis, you know, come by my feet and learn from me. You would only learn from your rabbi by their feet, never above their head. And so the significance was if something was lofted and higher up, it had more authority, more power, more honor. And so we see Puma in the Old Testament, right? These high places, they would worship pagan gods on these high places.
Right, they would always go to a high hill and erect, you know, altars and stuff to their gods, right?
Right, and they thought that if we have a shrine on a hill, on a high place, then all of a sudden our prayers and our whatever would mean more, because to be taller, to be higher, meant more authority and power. And so now we get to this verse, Elyon, the Lord Most High.
Right, of all the highness, he is the most high, the high and lofty one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it's, I mean, what this screams is that if someone is higher than me, that means I'm lower than them.
There's submission.
And in a culture where we almost react negatively to that. We don't want someone higher than me.
Oh, right.
I want everyone to be, you know, we want everyone to be the same, right? The equality. And we scream this in our culture. Everyone's gonna be the same. No one can have more or less. And
right.
And it goes on and on and on and on. But we are designed to be in awe of something greater than us. It's called worship, right?
Yeah.
We worship and value something that is great. I mean, to be awed by something, to see the transcendence and the significance. Some things actually are more important than other things, right?
Yeah.
Life is not equal where everything is of equal importance.
Right.
Some things are more important than others. And there are people and places and authorities that are higher than others.
And that is a good thing.
That is a good thing. It is not demeaning the intrinsic value and worth of a person to say that I am not as authoritative as someone else or at a higher place. Right. We're not talking about my personal identity and value and worth as a human being.
Mm.
But life does have distinctions.
Yeah.
And when we look at God and we think of God, we tend to want to make him manageable or bring him low so that we can elevate ourselves.
Be lifted up, yeah.
Right. So you have like Genesis 11, the Tower of Babel. They wanted to build a high tower, right? Mm,
yeah.
What is that for? It is because they wanted to be in the high and lofty place and make a name for themselves.
Their pride.
Name for themselves. And so as we're talking about names, the name of a person represents who they are.
Yeah.
And so when our God is called, the God of the Bible is called El Elyon, the God Most High. It is stating that he is like the ultimate, the supreme ruler, the one worthy of all worship and of all praise, the one who possesses all strength and all honor.
Yeah. Well, and I love that too, because if you're going to worship a God, you don't want tier two or three, right? If you're going to sacrifice, and worship and give, honor to a God, wouldn't you want it to be the Most High God? I mean, even in that verse, right, Psalm, 121, I look my eyes to the hills. Where does my help come from? It doesn't come from these other high places. It doesn't come from these lower gods. It comes from El Elyon, the Lord Most High. My help comes from Yahweh. And that is so significant. I know we have a couple other verses where this name, Elyon, is so screamed, majesty and power of God.
Right. We have Psalm 47. It says, clap your hands, all you nations. Shout to God with cries of joy. How awesome is the Lord, Yahweh, God Most High, the great King over all the earth.
Yeah.
You know, he is the Most High. He's not one of many. He is he is it. He is, in a sense, the man.
Yeah, I mean, he's in a tier all by himself. There's no one to match and rival his full supreme authority and loftiness, and appropriately, right? Because Yahweh should be the Most High God. I also love Psalm, if I may, I'm going to read this one.
Sure. Yeah.
Psalm 84. And this psalm is interesting. Psalm 83, because it's talking about the enemies of Israel, and as Asaph writes the psalm, hear how he ends Psalm 83 verse 18. After talking about his enemies and all that, he goes, "Let them know," talking to Israel, "let his enemies know whose name is Yahweh, for that you alone are the Most High God over all the earth. You alone are El Elyon over everything." There is a sense of peace and wonder and respect and submission when we know that El Elyon, the God that I worship, is in control of everything. He is the Most High. Not even my enemies can rival my God. there should be a sense of comfort and peace and trust because we know the name of God.
Right. And if this was the only name that we had of God, that he's the Most High God, because something has to be the Most High.
Right.
If everything is the Most High, then nothing's the Most High.
Exactly.
So someone has to be the Most High.
Mm-hmm.
If that Most High is evil and vindictive and self-serving, that would be a horrible, horrible, horrible thing.
You're right. Yeah.
But see, this is why God reveals himself in this composite, many different ways, many different names of God, so that we, because we've already talked that God is Jehovah Rapha, the God who heals.
Mm-hmm.
He's out to heal us, not hurt us.
Right.
He's the God who wants to be our righteousness. Mm-hmm. He's the God who wants to be our provider.
Yeah.
He's the God who wants to be our shepherd and lead us to all the right places.
Mm-hmm.
You see, this is the character of the God who is Most High.
Yeah.
Right? This is who God is. He is the Most High God. He wants not to be over us and squash us, but he's the Most High God, and he wants to elevate us to him. Mm. He wants a relationship with us.
Yeah.
He brings us to him, not us to pull him down.
Right. He wants a relationship.
He wants a relationship
with us.
This
Most High God bends down to take our hand, to bring us up, not to squash. I love how you say, God is not up there with his foot at our throats. No, he's the God who came down to carry us up to him.
Right. We see this in the New Testament, right? Jesus, Philippians 2, we mentioned this last time, at the name of Jesus, every knee will bow and tongue confess that Jesus Christ is Lord of all, right? He is the Most High God. Colossians 1 talks about just the majesty of Jesus, elevating Jesus.
Mm.
And I love Ephesians 2. It says that we're saved by grace, and that God seated us with Christ in the heavenly realms, right?
Yeah.
That we are raised up with Christ to Christ, right?
Mm.
The Most High God. You see, if the Most High is the one who knows us and loves us and wants us to know him and wants to provide for us and just wants that relationship with us, why would we not want to run to him?
Yeah.
Right? Right. I mean, so many people think, "Oh God, I don't want to submit to God. I don't want to be under some authority and whatnot." Well, you know what? If that authority is evil, absolutely.
Right.
Right.
But you shouldn't want to submit to an evil God.
You wouldn't.
God.
But if it is Eliah and the Most High God who desires what is best for us, and he wants to raise us up to him, right? Then he is a God to be worshipped and a God to be, that is awe-inspiring to think of God wants us to relate to him. He wants to bring us up to him. He doesn't want us to pull him down to us. And I think that's the difference in how so many of us, and even myself, think of God sometimes. I don't see him as the high and lofty one. I see him as the one that I manage.
Mm.
I manage this relationship with God. I somehow feel like I have to be in control and dictate what God can and can't do, what he should and shouldn't be, how it's going to impact my life, as if somehow I am the high and lofty one, and God is there to serve my needs.
Right. Well, even the first commandment, right? You shall have no other gods but me. How often do we want to put ourselves on the throne and have God serve us? You know, like you mentioned Philippians 2, right? Jesus, he humbled himself. You know how you wash someone's feet? You have to, one, wash their dirty feet, but you have to lower yourself, And how amazing that almighty, literally the highest, Eliyon, the Most High God, Jesus chose to come down.
Right. And even that picture there from John 13 where Jesus washes their feet. And then he says, no servant is greater than a master. If you call me Lord and Master, and this is what I have done, are you going to be higher than me? Or are you willing to submit lower?
You're right.
And what a good place for us to be, in a world that is full of pride and full of self-promotion, to be willing and to humble ourselves before El Elyon, the Most High God. That is the appropriate place to be.
It is.
And that is where we find ourselves when we know God's name. Those who know your name will trust in you.
Mm-hmm.
For you, Lord, have never forsaken those who seek you. When we see him as El Elyon, the high and lofty one, and we put ourselves at his feet, he says, I will never cast you aside.
Yeah.
I will never abandon you. I will never let go of you. I will never forsake you. And we can trust God when he says this.
Yeah.
This is a God to be pursued, a God to reach out to. And that is expressed most perfectly in the person of Jesus, who lowered himself, became a man, and became obedient to the death on the cross so that we could be raised up with him.
Right, who is seated right at the right hand. Yep. Yeah, that's amazing. You know, Puma, what's a good AQ for us? As we wrap up this beautiful name, El Elyon, what is a good AQ for us and the listeners?
Well, there's a lot of ways to apply this. I mean, when you think of God, you know, like I just, you know, you think of God, you think of Jesus. Does the first response, response of awe, or do you think, oh, what I can get from him or what I need, you know, what I need from him, you know? And if you think of God, when God comes into your mind, if you don't have a sense of awe and wow, what's stopping you from being wowed by God? Mm. And what is it that is hindering you from seeing how amazing God is? You know, do you see God as the Most High, or do you see him as someone that I manage, that I control, or that I have expectations for?
Yeah, yeah. No, that's good. Yeah. Yeah, do we use God or do we worship him? You know, are we wowed by God? And if not, if we're not wowed by Jesus, why not, right? I mean, again, sometimes the most sacrificial things are the most empowering. What kind of person, literally God, washes sinners' feet? That should wow us.
Right.
El Elyon should wow us. So yeah, that's a great AQ. You know, what is getting in the way of us being wowed, being amazed by our God? And do we worship him or do we try to manage him? No, that's good, Puma. Thank you. And guys, thank you again so much for joining us. I love these days where my father and I can dig into God's word and highlight a name and just do this podcast. And if you have any questions, please, as always, feel free to reach out to us at thepumapodcast@gmail.com. We'd love to touch base with you, hear from you guys, and hopefully encourage you guys as you go throughout your weeks. And yeah, guys, tune in next time, Fridays at 10:10, and we'll see you there. Bye.
Yep, bye-bye.